Okie dokie. This is Gordon W2TTT, and this is the Bergen Amateur Radio Association Technical Net. Any stations with emergency or priority traffic, please call K2 Bravo Alpha Romeo. Okay, nothing heard. That's a good thing. Good evening, everyone. This is Gordon W2TTT, and the Bergen Amateur Radio Association runs a technical net every Thursday night at 9 p.m. on the Chestnut Ridge 2-meter repeater, 146.955 megahertz. Shift is -600. The tone is 141.3. Repeater is located in Alpine, New Jersey, providing a beautiful coverage in the roughly an 80-mile radius from that point in most directions. And certainly supports traffic in the tri-state area and sometimes even eastern Pennsylvania. This is a conversation. We hope you'll participate in the conversation. It's about amateur radio, electronics, computing, electricity, telecommunications, things that use all those toys, ways we can enjoy our amateur radio, or things related to it, where we can serve others, etc. So it may not be as gnarly as you might think at any given time, but we do focus on operationalizing, you know, the ability to get on the air and doing things, and this conversation is focused on that. So, we do check in a little differently on this net than others. We check in with our call sign, our name, and then we indicate whether we have a question, a comment, and we got multiple too. We also allow for both question and comment, by simply saying both, or none of the above if you're just checking in and you don't have a question or a comment. You might ask, well, if I don't have a question or comment, why should I bother checking in? Great question. And the answer is because you may be part of a conversation. And if you don't check in, we can't include you in the conversation. And amazingly enough, more often than not, people who come in with no questions end up getting asked about things that we know they know about or think they might need to know about or might want to know more about. But we're a little too afraid to ask. So don't be afraid to just jump in get on the net, even if you don't have a question. Alrighty, so let's do this in some orderly way. Let's start with the call signs that begin with the letter A for Alpha. Please call with your call sign, your name, and indicate whether you have a question, comment, both or none of the above. Please call K2BAR.
K2BAR, AA2NI, name is Nico. No comments, no questions, just listening for now.
Hi, Nico. Very good. Very good. Very good. I actually was hoping you'd jump in. And because we have, let's see, any other alphas before we go on. Okay, because I know there's at least one in two who's always normally late, I'm going to let them all check in first. The November stations, please call K2BAR.
K2BAR. This is N2OIA with three really great and informative questions.
Oh boy, now he's bragging. Gee, okay, Noel. Three questions. Wow. It's like the three Caballeros or something. All right. Very good. Any other Novembers?
November Bravo 2 Foxtrot D. None of the above.
Good evening, D. Okie doke. Very, very good. All right. Any other stations with November? November. Well, let's move this along to the Whiskies.
None of the above.
Whiskey 2, Juliet Echo Kilo with a comment.
KW2GEK with a comment. I think I got that. Good evening, Don. I believe I had W1AU with no comment. Is that true, Mr. Bill?
Affirmative.
Okay. Was there any other station in that pileup?
W2 Gray White Plains, no comment.
I'll get you the echo on the station. None of the above. Over. Alright, whoa, let's slow down. W1JT, I got you. None of the above. Thank you, Jim. The station in White Plains, and then I'll go to the echoing station.
Yes, Gordon. Ray, W2, Charlie Hotel, White Plains. No questions or other comments at this time.
Thank you, Ray. W2, Charlie Hotel. Very good. Alrighty. Echo Link Station, please check in at this time.
CX6CAH.
Online in a minute. Any other whiskeys?
WE2R, Charlie, no questions or comments.
Good evening, Charlie. Alrighty. Any other whiskeys? Alrighty. How about the Kilo 2s?
This is K2AMI. I guess I have a comment. No questions, though.
Okay, there we go. That's my answer. Tony, you're on Simplex on the output. That was what I thought was Echo Link. Okay. Tony, also, I got a cryptic email from you about single and double hop, which I didn't quite understand, but maybe you could explain that when you get around to it. And other Kilo 2s.
Okay, K2BAR. This is K2ZO. I have a question and I have a comment.
Okay, Jim. No problem. We can do that. And this time I won't forget. All right. Any other Kilo 2s? Okay. And any other Kilos? EMA, Barco. No questions or comments. Okay, we're two stations in there, KC2ZMA, Marco with no questions or comments, I got that. Who was the station with Marco? Okay, who was the station with Marco? Okay, to access this repeater you need a PL of 141.3, a tone of 141.3, so we'll drag our heels later on for you to try to get that in, because I think what happened is you came in on Marco's PL and just managed to be noise because of the blended signal. All right, anybody else with a Kilo call? Okay, any station, any call sign, please call K2BAR. Tony, I'm going to go to you first. K2AMI, K2BAR, your commentary, my friend.
Connected, CX6CAH.
Okay, CX6CAH. Welcome aboard. You want to say hello?
Kilo Bravo 1 Tango Juliet Mike.
Hey, good evening.
We had a couple of things going on here. I hear CX6CAH. Hold a second. KB1 Tango Juliet Mike, your name, and do you have questions or comments for the net?
CX6CAH on my iPhone. No comments.
CX6CAH disconnected.
Oh my. Okay. KB1 TJM, go ahead.
KB1 TJM, name here is Lewis, Lima Uniform, India Sahara. No comments or questions for the net.
Okay, Lewis, where are you located?
We're here in Stamford, Connecticut.
Awesome. Awesome. Welcome to from Stamford. All right, any other stations on the net who wish to check in? One more. Okay, let's move on then. We'll try looking for openings in a minute. K2AMI, K2BAR. Tony, you had some comments.
I just want to verify, am I going through the repeater now?
You are. You're just a little loud on the audio. Just back off the mic a little bit. You'll be good.
Okay. I had to readjust the radio for the contest. I just sent you a map that Dave Levine came up with that showed very nicely the single hop and double hop propagation for our VHF contest. If you get a chance to open the JPEG, if it's on your, you know, hopefully it's on your email, it's really interesting. And I sent it to a couple other guys that might want to discuss that. Back to you, Gordon.
Okay. I see what's going on here. Yeah, I'm opening it up now. Wowie kazowie. I'd love to see a timestamp or color-coded dots by what hour of what day they were each worked. That might be interesting. Like, I sometimes do colors of the rainbow. You know, going from reds to blues, as it were. But that's pretty neat. That is very, very neat. Clustering the corners. A lot of southwestern stations. Of course, you have the Midwest. No Colorado, no Utah, no Nevada. Oh, so many opportunities and so few contacts. I see you work ZOI out in Arizona. That's pretty cool. Very nice. Very nice map. Tony, is it possible to put this on the Barra website?
Not sure. Dave is the guy who did all this, and I can't do it. Well, we'll speak to Dave and see what he says. But I think it's very fascinating. As you can see, the skip from the different locations. Of course, I don't have. I guess he could probably indicate timestamp also. But just the fact that there was skip is fascinating. Of course, you can see also, as he indicated, there's two errors there, one in the Caribbean and one in Canada. But otherwise, we did pretty good.
You know, what was the story with each of those?
Misinterpretation of the grid square, that's all. One letter error in the grid square. I think he indicates that further in his email, if you go back to the email.
All right, so EL80 what became EM80, that makes sense. And, well, the other one was not a... Oh. Yeah, K3EOD is definitely an FM29, not FM29. I don't know if I've ever worked 29. I've worked 25, I've worked 26. And, That was well, very nice. That's very, very nice. Very cool.
Also, Bennett came up with one and showed it to us at Kit Night. That's why we went ahead with this one. Bennett also has a similar map, and maybe we can get him to project it someday for us.
Yeah, I mean, this should be up on the Barra website with a date as to
you know, Dayton band, and the, you know, just eliminating it. Very nice. Very nice. So tons of Gulf Coast stations, mostly Florida, a few West Gulf, a few Central Texas, Amarillo, areas north of Houston. Nothing in the Dallas area, amazing. Although you do have several stations in various parts of Louisiana. A whole cluster in Kansas and western Missouri and eastern Missouri and Illinois and Indiana. And then, of course, the locals. Nothing much to the north. That really kind of surprises me. I suggest that nobody turned the antenna that way more than anything. And then, what do you call it? A lot of southwest New Mexico, Arizona, California, and it looks like Baja, California as well. Mexican station there too. Very nice.
Comment about the northern propagation. We spoke to Sugar Zulu, W2 Sugar Zulu, who said they had 2 days of heavy rain and very cold temperatures in that area. You know, they're up at Lake, their Mount Greylock. And I think the northeast section was inundated with heavy rain and bad weather, and that might have affected propagation in that direction.
I'm more thinking it was going to affect people's interest in getting on the air. But yeah, whatever. That's pretty cool. Does anybody have questions for Tony on the contest?
If anybody else would like to see that map, we could forward it to them.
Yeah, I can forward to them, or you can actually, whatever. That's great. I do want to point out something, guys, that this was done from Tony's home and not from the mountaintop, so this is what you can do on 6 meters. Tony, your radio was what, and your antenna was what, and your power level was what?
The antenna was a four-element beam mounted on a chimney, of course, with a rotator. The radio was an FT-756 Pro 3. But we did have a kilowatt linear amplifier, an East, converted Heath kit to 6 meters, running a, most of the time we ran close to a kilowatt through the amplifier. So that was basically what our station was. Not an unusually expensive station.
CH,
go.
Yes, I was on the contest with my wife, too, KC2NKU. She had 50-some contacts, 6-2, and we did get some 432. I had 66. We got as far as a couple each in New Mexico.
Yeah, and that's highly consistent with what Tony has here, although he went all the way out to California and Baja, California, and Arizona along the way. But nothing north of there. I mean, it was amazing. Like, you go north of, much north of San Diego, no, there's nothing.
We were using just a ham stick with an FT-857 Delta 100 watts and a homebrew three-element beam on 2 meters hand-rotated on the balcony here. So we were pretty minimal. We got as far as W2SZ to the north and into Pennsylvania on 2 meters. Oh, we did work K2LIM near Elmira on 2.
Very nice, and you did work New Mexico on a ham stick.
Yes, it was Sunday morning for just a short while, N2IC and K5AM, Grants and Las Cruces.
Oh, I know N2IC, I remember when he used to live around here, 1,000 years ago. Very nice. Well, that was just excellent. Excellent. Anybody else?
KO2, okay, good evening.
Bennett, I understand you have a pretty map to share as well.
Just caught the end of Tony's conversation. I don't know if you were reviewing contest. So, yeah, I played 6 meters mostly and a few 2 and 432. I didn't get New Mexico. I did get a VO1. And I did get... Gene, KJI, as when he's in the Bahamas, and out to California. So, up, down, and around.
Oh, so you were able to work Gene. What grid square was he in?
remember. FK-60? I can't remember. But it was C-6-A-B-B was his call while he was there.
Very nice. Very nice. Probably Fox Kilo 67 or something.
Yeah, I don't recall. But I played a bunch of hours and there were nice nice conditions. It just came in waves. You know, you'd work, you know, one grid square. 10 people in one grid square in the middle of Missouri or something like that. Or Minnesota. Or, I can't remember some of the places. Of course, you know, EL 96, 97, 98, Florida area. So I had, I can't remember how many I had. 307 contacts on 6, 79 grids.
Very nice. Tony, what were Barra's final tallies, if I may ask, by band? You know, contacts per band and multipliers per band.
Sorry, I can't come up with them instantly exactly, but we had like 200 contacts on 6 and like 55 grids, and I think we did something like 56 contacts on 2 with less than 20 grids, and then we did 432 and 222 with minimum, like maybe 20 contacts on each one with 5 or 6 grids.
Okay, that sounds fine. Very good. Anybody have questions for Tony or for Bennett?
Yeah, Mr. K.
Good evening, James.
A question for Tony.
Go.
Did you ever sort out what was going on with 432, why we were having such a struggle?
No, there. I just happened to be, many stations could not reach me at 432, and I don't know the nature of the problem. The antennas seem to be okay on FM, but I just seem to be in a hole on FM for most locations. Although I can make the repeat as well, and the SWR and the antenna is good. It's just location, I think.
The absorption in your site seems to be absurd. Not to mention your elevation is not exactly wonderful, somewhat like mine. But you have much more, you have much denser foliage that will be highly absorptive at 432, and everything was damp last weekend.
I'm destinated. I'll be back. KO2, okay.
Are you dead?
Destinated.
That's what that means. I'm glad he's not, even though he keeps claiming he is. KO2, KW2, TTTK2BAR. Okay. So, Tony?
FK2AMON.
Yeah, so I think it's absorption at your location.
You haven't worked it out yet.
Get a really dry wind and get the leaves to fall.
Connected. CX6CAH.
CX6CAH, K2BAR, good evening. Oh well, anybody else have any comments about the contest or 6 meter, 2 meter, 222, 432, etc. DXing?
W2JK.
Mr. Don.
I want to thank Jim and you for doing the run at the around the good square circle there. It might use a 2 meter handy talkie when I'm talking to you on now with the outside antenna, and that's 4 extra multipliers that I always get on 2 meters. On 6 meters, I wound up with something like 17 contacts. Was it 17? Yeah, 17 grids on 6 meters. The local 4, I got FM 41, FM 32, a bunch down in Florida, FM 10, FM 11, and I'm just using 10 watts on the dipole here. I did hear that one guy in California, but he was weak and he faded out, so at least I heard him.
It's always a thrill to even hear it like that, because it's sort of like winning the trifecta in the horse race. So, it's a good contest, and a lot of fun. Only glitch here, the key on the lead on my CW key must have gone open, or it was swinging open, and I tried to send, and nothing happened. I changed telegraph keys, and then everything went okay, and I put a new cord on the one that I usually use, so it seems to be all right now. But out of the contest here, I had 59 contacts on 6. I had 21 of those were on CW. And of course, 12 contacts on 2 meters. Back to net, W2JK.
Well, that's pretty cool. Very nice. Congratulations. Anybody else?
All right.
Noel, your questions, sir.
Okay. We had gone over this a long time in the past, but if I put up a beam, the beam being having a wind loading of 3.5 square foot and weighs 26 pounds. The advertising for this particular beam says that it can be turned with a light-duty TV rotator. I don't believe that.
What are you trying to turn on a TV rotator, like light-duty TV rotator?
The antenna weighs 26 pounds and has a wind loading of 3.5 square foot.
Well, okay. The phrase light-duty television rotator does not mean, necessarily, an Alliance or a Radio Shack. You know, it might mean a U-100 with a thrust bearing, but it's certainly not going to mean a Radio Shack rotator. What it's more likely to be is like a CD-45 or something like that. Something with a bell-shaped housing, a little more sturdy. Yeah, you could probably turn a 25-pound antenna with that. And that's considered, quote, light duty.
Well, I wasn't, I'm not a great believer of going to the work, putting something up, and having it fall down. So I purchased a rebuilt AM4 with the control box.
You purchased a rebuilt AM4 with the control box rebuilt as well, and how much did the pair cost you?
Plus the heavy-duty lower mass support kit so that you can pole mount it rather than mounting it inside of a tower.
Okay, how much did your control box cost you?
I promise I wouldn't say.
Oh, good Lord. Okay, because we're trying to both acquire some and get rid of some, depending on what it is and who they are. And, you know, I'm always looking to benchmark this stuff because there seems to be a broad diversity of opinion on what the price of a rotator should be.
Well, according to what I see on the net, a new price is $600 plus shipping, plus the bracket, which appears to be another $100.
Right. And when you ask someone to buy one that's in good shape with all those same parts, and you ask for $250, and they look at you like you're crazy.
Well, this was rebuilt by somebody whose hobby it is. So it's a new steel locking ring, all new bearings. And a person who is proud of his workmanship. So my question is, I put it up in a roof. I was told that I cannot just run. I have have to have 50-foot, 75-foot of LMR 400. And if I run it straight down and let the cable twist, then it will last about 3 weeks, whereupon the table, the copper inside the cable will shatter. And then I should use something a little bit different.
Well, there's probably some compromises. You could do what I do, is I use LMR 400 solid core. And what I do is I take a 3 foot ring of the stuff, about maybe four turns or more, and make a stress loop around the rotator using that. So above the rotator I secure it, and below the rotator I secure it. But it's a minimum of four turns, about 3 feet in diameter, going around the rotator so as not to stress the cable. I've done that for years. It works great.
Will I be able to use LMR 400 for that?
You can, but you have to pay attention. I mean, you're better off with a flexible piece of RG214 to go from just below the rotator to the antenna feed point and just connectorize it and seal it up. I didn't have that available, so I just, you know, squandered a whole bunch of LMR 400 to get around the rotator. Anybody have thoughts about that? You know, this is a religious topic, so let me talk to let's get to one of the high priests of transmission line use and abuse. K2ZO, K2BAR.
I think we already discussed this. This is K2ZO. I think we'd already done this, beat this to death.
At least once. I figured a declaratory ruling on your part would probably help.
The answer is certainly have to have a flexible piece of coax for a loop that goes off that thing. On a CR44 would easily turn that antenna, which is commonly called a TV rotator. It doesn't have a brake. And that would easily do that.
Right. He was more concerned about the LMR 400 or what kind of coax to use to go around a rotator.
Don't use LMR 400. It's rather rigid.
Well, that's right. Yeah, but, you know, I mean, basically, RG214 is plenty good enough. That's one way around the rotator. If you're going to do what I did, and as I said, use four or more turns about 3 feet in diameter to get around the rotator. That way you don't put a lot of stress on the actual cable itself.
That's about right. Well, you figure you'll find out the first time you do it. You don't have enough cable, right?
Well, yeah, I mean, in my case I did, but yeah, you're right. I mean, you waste a lot of cable doing that, and you're actually better off going to find a piece of RG214, even 213, and flexible of that nature to get around the rotator, even on 2 meters and above. Anybody else have any comments on the subject? Okay, Noel, that's two questions.
Rotator control cable, 8 conductors. I have a polyphaser for the incoming coax. Do I need any lightning protector for the rotator control cable?
It's not a bad idea. Couple strategies for that. One is to, you know, if you have a connector as it comes in your house, just disconnect the connector. Another is to reconnect that cable on the, you know, as it comes in onto your ground bus and ground all 8 leads going to the rotator. That's another way of handling it. Some people say, no, you're better off leaving it floating.
and not grounding it. That way there's no current pass through the rotator mechanism itself. You won't blow the rheostat, or you won't blow parts of the motor or the starting caps in the control unit, sorry. But you won't have any problem with that. But they do make them. I was able to acquire a such a multi-cable device, multi-wire device that was really meant for T1 circuits, T1, T3 copper circuits, and I passed a rotor cable through it without any problem, and I'm reasonable to take care of any lightning strikes that would come its way.
They could have survived a direct hit. What I'm worried about is near misses and the induced currents.
Yep. What do you call it? Hold on a second. I see. James got a copy of Dick Cody's new book, Me Governor. He just got a signed autograph copy from the governor, the former governor. And he's presenting it to me. That's pretty good. Ah, dear me. Anyway. I would think simply disconnecting it and disconnecting, as you know, any power lead going into the control box is probably sufficient.
Well, how about if I could get an 8-pole double throw switch? One set would go to my control box, and when I clipped it, it would ground everything from the outside.
Comment.
Yeah, go ahead. You saved me the breath.
Noel, why are you wasting your time trying to protect a hemp or rotator? There's nothing that's easily damaged in that thing. It's as simple as as can be, okay? Put it up and run it. If it was a solid-state control with all kinds of stuff, then I'd worry about it. All you need is a ground wire on it, and if it gets hit direct, it's just going to vaporize. Just make sure you've got everything in the station grounded. Don't worry about the rotator.
That was the 73 at 2 AM.
This is KC2SQP, Stuart. Sorry I'm coming in late. Do you hear me? Back to net.
NKO2OK back in net. And Stu, we hear you. Where is net control?
I'm here. Stuart, is that like Mr. Alpar who's here? Which Stuart checked in?
This is KC2SQP, Stuart. I'm sorry, I'm coming in late. Back to net.
Okay, so it is Mr. Alpart. Okay, hello, Stu. I'll add you in. Welcome aboard. Haven't heard you in a while. I might see you tomorrow night. We'll see. We'll see what happens with maybe I'll run down to the Fairlawn Club. All right, very good. I think Jim's comments to Noel on the subject are pretty definitive. I mean, it's like, you know, beyond making a disconnect, it's like, yeah, why? I wouldn't even make a grounded disconnect. I would just make a disconnect and then just unplug the AC going into the rotator if you drop the cable going into it, if you're really that worried.
Station? Question about lighting.
Go ahead, Doc.
Okay, we see these multi-outlet strips on the market that supposedly have some kind of protection in them. Are they as good as they sound? Or is that just advertising?
The good ones are really good, and in fact, you're not going to believe this, but for company-provided equipment, I'm required to feed
power through one of those things in my home.
Comment.
Out there. Jim, go.
Yeah, they work very well, and I don't know if you've ever taken apart any of the cheaper ones, but if you do, you're going to be in for a shock. some of the better ones, there's no guarantee on any of those strips. I've taken some apart, and they're junk. Ones that didn't even have the ground connected. But some of the good ones are okay. Look for UL listings on there. But the answer is a whole house protector. That's what I would have told Noel. What you really need is on your service entrance is a $150 device that has three leads on it. It's called a whole house protector. And I took a direct hit to the power line in front of my house and didn't get a scratch in here.
Anybody else? Okay, well, there you go. Let's see. All right, well, I think that kind of puts a nail on it. I have two of these strips. Actually, I have three. But two nice, really nice ones I bought. Not the kind that Jim mentioned, and I actually look, most of my wall warty stuff on those things. That works out really, really well. And I'm glad we did. Because you don't need any aggravation. You really don't. And it's not that expensive. Isobar makes probably among the nicest ones, but there are plenty of other ones that are just fine.
Mr. 2K.
Mr. NS2K, go ahead, Jim.
I do have a whole house. It's far from the whole thing. Obviously, there's a great deal more sewing together of the ground system to provide a nice uniform, how should I say, ground that if you do get not only a direct strike, but well, obviously not many of us can afford to build to a direct strike, but you know, you're going to have near strikes that will cause a considerable voltage rise, and if everything is bonded together, it will all rise together, and no one piece will get destroyed, hopefully. But, or certainly you'll reduce the chance of stuff getting destroyed. But the whole house is a huge improvement over none. One of the ones that I've used years by was made by Transtector, but there are lots of other ones that are not entirely... well, there are a couple different philosophies in the design, but and each has its own value. But any of the, if you pay sufficient money for it, it'll be just fine.
Okay. Anybody else?
The one that do I have it? This is K2ZO.
Go ahead, Jim.
Yeah, the one that I have sacrificed itself. There is an indicator, an LED on there to tell you whether it's good or bad. And after the hit to the power line in front of the house, of course my neighbors had, one neighbor had a fire, other neighbors had a lot of equipment blown out, and I had nothing. But when I did look at the whole house protector, the one that I have, has an indicator on it, and the indicator was telling me it's time to spend $150 for a new one.
Yeah, well, I, oddly enough, have not bothered to get a whole house protector at this point. However, it's one of the things I'd like to do possibly this summer. They're not that expensive to put in. Jim, why don't you describe, I think you each, Jim and Jim both, Zeto and S2K, since you each have a whole house protector, why don't you describe you know, what was involved for its installation.
This is K2ZO.
Okay.
It has three leads on it. It's potted, and it goes in your box as it comes in the house, your main breaker box. And the three leads, one, of course, goes to the neutral, and the other two go to the other leads coming in. It must be installed after the main disconnect switch. It does not get installed on the public service side. Otherwise, they'll come in and remove it if they see it. So it gets installed after your main disconnect switch. And it has some, I can't remember the specs, whatever they were, but it was, you know, for like a couple of nanoseconds, it could take a 5,000 amp hit. And as I say, it was not cheap. I installed it years ago, and it was installed, and it was in there for 10 years. And then finally we had this whack across the street. And then when I went down and looked at it, it was saying, uh-oh, I gave my life for you, that cadet.
Glad that it did. Mr. NS2K, go ahead.
Yep, in my case, it was a device that connected in to through a box nut on the side of the panel. I had, when I had the panel replaced a few years ago, there used to be a federal no-blow panel, and I got real tired of that foolishness. Anyway, got a real panel in there, and while he was at it, I asked him to install this whole house. And yeah, it's it has three wires on it. The body of it connects to the box, and then there's a ground lead, and the two hot leads go to a heavy branch circuit. If you have like a dryer connection or a stove range connector or a big air conditioner, yeah, it's got to be a 220, but the heaviest one you've got in the box. Connected across that in parallel with whatever device is on there. And if the whole house thing actually shorts, it will blow the breaker. But anything shy of that, it'll suck up a whole lot of that transient energy. And it's okay.
That's excellent. Anybody else? I mean, a double with somebody. Anybody else?
K2VAR, KC2RS, I'm checking in, Gordon.
All right. Hey, Robert, do you have a question or comment for the net regarding, I guess, at this point? Or anything else, I should say?
Negative. Just headed home from Wawa. So have a good evening. Hello, Jim and Jim.
Okie doke. We have one more question from our good friend, Mr. N2OEL, and then we can go on to Mr. Zeto's questions and comments. N2OEL, your next, I think last question, K2BAR. Actually, I think that was his third question, and I think that it was answered. So he's gone. Alrighty. Well, thank you very much. K2ZO, comment and a question.
Okay. The comment was this week Steve, W2ML, showed me an article about antennas and said he'd like to build an antenna for his trip to Bermuda that was a little bit more compact. And he dug out an article by Lou Gordon, who he has talked to before, WK4VX. And this is a linear-loaded 40-meter dipole. And I constructed it this week, and I gave it to Steve. He put it on the air, and it works. He was quite surprised it worked quite well. I built a ballon into it, a current-type ballon. Made it very light. Now, the way it works is it's a shortened dipole, and it's 45 feet long,
which of course is a lot shorter than a normal 40 meter, which is 66 feet long. And then what it has is a linear loaded stub made of twin lead. And in order to support the whole thing, the coax comes up, of course, and now it goes out each side like a folded dipole to the two stubs, which are placed in proximate with the dipole. And we put it all together, and then we sewed the wire that formed the dipole through the holes in the open wire line. And this was in the July 2002 QSD. So it made a very compact antenna, and it can be scaled up for other bands. But it worked quite well. Steve tested it this week, and he said it worked great. So I just thought I'd just pass this on. And if you go and look at the archives, it's July 2002, QST, page 40, K4VX, linear loaded dipole for 7 megahertz.
Wow, so I'm still trying to figure out, it's not spirally loaded. It's basically folded back on itself, and that's it?
Yes. In other words, if you were to draw the coax being attached to a piece of open wire line, which is in parallel, it would go out and then come back and then attach to the center of the dipole. So you got a lead that comes out, comes back, goes to the dipole, and then that goes out. So it's basically as if you took the lead of the dipole and folded it back on itself. And to support the whole thing, the lead, the wire lead that becomes the dipole, is actually sewn through the holes in the open wire line.
Gotcha. Very nice. Very, very nice. Well, that would work very, very well, and I can see why it's so much shorter. So it doesn't fold back all the way. It's maybe a third of each side, I guess, or a quarter of each side is folded back.
Yeah, about a third of it is folded back, and that apparently is the optimum for making this thing work in a decent fashion. So if you look at it, the way it works, the total length of each side of the dipole is 22 foot 6 inches, and then the folded back section, which consists of 450 open wire line, is 11 foot 10 inches.
Nice. Very, very nice. All right, so look at the K4VX design from July of 2002 QSD. Very, very nice. Anybody have any questions for Jim?
Yeah, is it a single bander? Is that antenna a single bander?
Tony, it's a single band. I have no idea how it would work on any other band. But basically, you could make a 40-meter dipole that's, 40-something feet long, which means that you can make an 80-meter dipole that's 80 feet. And, of course, there are many people that might be advantageous to be able to get it up there. And according to Steve, it works quite well.
That's great. He's going to take this to Bermuda with him?
Now, that's what he wanted it for, and he showed me it, and I said, yeah, I could build you one.
That's great. That is absolutely wonderful. All righty. You know, small antennas are useful, and, you know, frankly, it weighs less than a screwdriver, and God knows more efficient. Ah, dear me. That's great. That's absolutely wonderful. I'm cogitating on how I'm going to have time this week to put my screwdriver, by the way, on my van. That's one of my projects. Alrighty. Anybody else have any comments for Jim? Any follow-on? on comments from Jim.
Okay, I try to make this thing as light as possible. The center insulator is a piece of plexiglass, and it's drilled so that you can hang it up. And there's glass insulators, small glass insulators on the end. And in order to provide some of a ballon action, I have a current ballon. And what I did is I fed it with about 10 feet of RG-141, which is Teflon, small coax. It'll take a couple of kilowatts, but it's only the size of RG-58. And then I have a whole string of ferrite beads on there, the small ones. So it's very, very light, very compact. So all you have to do is put there's a connector on it, so all you got to do is take your coax and hook it onto it, and off you go.
Yeah, well, you know, you actually got me thinking. I have a couple of 40-meter dipoles around here, and one of them, I mean, they have them on spools that are like these power cable spools that you buy for, you know, utility cords and things like that. I have various ones marked for different bands, et cetera. I have a couple in my truck and a couple of them in other places around the garage, et cetera. If I need an antenna, I just reach out and grab it. And Dick Colton is going off to Maine this summer, K1JMI, and I asked him, so what are you going to do? And he goes, well, you know, last couple of years in the trees, I haven't been able to go on HF, and now that we've cleaned up all the trees, you know, I hadn't really given it some thought. And I said, well, you know, Dick, you like your 40-meter morning net with, you know, Jack Maher and a couple other guys, you know, in the morning. If you could do it from Maine, you'll have a kick-ass signal down that way. And if you had an antenna, he goes, you know, you're right. The trees have all been cleared up on the property. They hit blowdowns from last spring, so last year wasn't feasible to get on the air. So he's going to take his 746 with him, and I'm going to provide him with a 40-meter dipole, and I'm probably going to provide him with a 20-meter dipole as well. But my question to you is, since the 46 Pro has two separate antenna inputs, I should just make two separate dipoles, just keep it easy that way, right?
Yeah, that'll work.
And about 6 or 8 turns of RG 58, about maybe 6 or 8 inches in diameter should be enough of a ballon.
Yeah, but that adds weight. I find that the ferrite beads, I buy the ones that are the size that fit over RG-58. Actually, I don't use RG-58 for antennas like that, but a lead that comes down where I put the ballon, I use RG-141 or RG-303. You know, these are RG-50 or RG-400. These are RG-58 size pieces, our coax, but they'll take considerably more power. And just string the beads on there and you're in business. It's much lighter than putting up a big 10-turn loop.
Well, can I get the simple snap-ons at Radio Shack and just buy a bunch of those real quick, or something similar if I could find it? Nothing elaborate to do that, just, you know, maybe 8 or 10 inches of that stuff, and it'll be away we go.
Well, what you can do is with if you use a RG-58 or RG-8X, you can use the larger diameter and go through twice, so each time you go through, you know, you go through a second time, so the inductance is 4 times. So a larger ferrite, you even though you got a loop and a coax, you got 4 times the choking ability on that balance. So yeah, 2 of those are the equivalent of a string of beads, but they don't look as neat.
Okay, well, the only ones I have that are big are the ones that are they call them for computer cables. They're not tubular. They're more like a rectangle. They're not very deep, but their hole is maybe 3/4 inch or an inch by maybe 3/8. Is that what you're talking about? They're rectangular.
Yeah, those will work. The other ones I have are round, but yeah, those will work.
Okay, so just the normal garbage you buy at Radio Shack, just 2 of those, go through each one twice, and you're good to go.
That'll do a significant job at choking off the RF.